Sea Grant in Lake Superior, sustaining the freshwater sea. A production of the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. In the center of North America, yet still remote to most of the continent's inhabitants, lies a massive lake of remarkable beauty and strength. The first Europeans to reach this lake thought they had surely reached the Pacific Ocean, and told amazing stories upon their return about this immense freshwater sea. Early French explorers described it as the uppermost lake, or
Le Lac Supérieur.
And indeed, of all the great lakes they had found, this lake is the farthest west and the highest in both latitude and elevation. During historic times, Ojibwe peoples, also known as the Chippewa, had solidified control of the lands around the lake, so those tribes referred to themselves as the Kishe-Gume-Win-En-Iweg, the people of the Big Water. In 1855, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow rather freely used Ojibwe words and legends in his famous poem, The Song of Hiawatha. By the shores of Gichigumi, by the shining big sea water, stood the wigwam of Nokomis, daughter of the moon, Nokomis. This is likely how the name Gichigumi came to be associated with Lake Superior. Through trade and negotiation, the Ojibwe were able to deal more successfully than other tribes with the expansion of Western culture into their lands, and they remain a vital presence around the lake today. The first English-speaking explorers described Superior's water as so transparent and pure it seemed as though the canoes they used to traverse it were floating through the air. They marveled at the size and abundance of its fish, and as they came to realize that this was indeed the largest freshwater lake in the world, the anglicized name Superior seemed all the more fitting. Russia's Lake Baikal may be deeper, holding more water, but Superior's surface area covers more than 31,000 square miles, and at its widest measures 350 miles long and 160 miles across. Anyone who has ever visited this mighty lake will tell you it is truly a freshwater ocean. And when the gales of November come early, the lake can unleash a formidable natural power that only adds to its legendary mystique. Today, Lake Superior is bordered on the north by the province of Ontario, on the west by the state of Minnesota, and in the south by the states of Wisconsin and Michigan. By international agreement, the United States and Canada share stewardship of this precious resource and its watershed. The lake's surface is about 600 feet above sea level, averaging a depth of 490 feet with a maximum depth of 1,333 feet. It receives about 29 inches of average annual rainfall, while the average amount lost to evaporation annually is about 18 inches. Limnologists, or lake scientists, would classify this lake as oligotrophic, as its clear, cold, and deep waters hold relatively few nutrients. Superior's nearly 3,000 miles of shoreline are still 90% forested, and much of that remains wilderness. More than 20 freshwater estuaries act as filters to trap particulates and sediments resulting from storms, floods, and human activities. The rugged woods on the shores of Lake Superior in Wisconsin form a transition zone, or ecotone, between biomes. Deciduous broadleaf forests mix with the tamarack, pines, and spruce of the boreal forests farther north. Before Western settlement, wolves hunted woodland caribou and elk in these northern woods. Though all these species were exterminated by the early 1900s, the wolves and elk have returned. Perhaps someday the caribou will as well. Superior's retention time, the time it takes for all the water now in the lake to be replaced by new water, is 191 years, the longest of any of the Great Lakes. This also makes Superior the most vulnerable to long-term water pollution. If the lake were to become polluted today and all pollution stopped tomorrow, it would take almost 200 years before its water would again be as pure as it was yesterday. At Superior's southeastern corner, its surging waters flow into the St. Mary's River, a crooked 61-mile channel of water separating Michigan's Upper Peninsula from Ontario. Just 16 miles from the south of the river and Lake Huron are the St. Mary's Rapids, where the river drops about 20 feet in half a mile. For centuries, these rapids were a barrier to water travel between Lake Superior and the other lakes. It wasn't until 1855 that the first locks and canal for moving ships around these rapids was built at the international twin cities of Sault Ste. Marie, located in Ontario and Michigan. Currently, there are 5 locks, 4 operated by the U.S. and 1 by Canada, and this includes the giant lock Poe, the largest on the Great Lakes, which can hold ships up to 1,100 feet long and 105 feet wide. In peak years, more tons of cargo pass through these locks than any other on Earth. The University of Wisconsin's Sea Grant Institute strives to be a leader in developing and implementing research, outreach, and education to help protect and preserve this mighty lake. Many people are a little surprised to hear that Wisconsin has a Sea Grant program, but with 1,000 miles of coastal waters on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior, Wisconsin is the epitome of the mid-coast. The Sea Grant program itself was begun in 1966 when Congress passed the National Sea Grant College Program Act, hoping to ignite a blue revolution for aquatic resources which would mirror the successes of the agricultural green revolution of the 1950s. The University of Wisconsin was the 6th Sea Grant College established in 1972, and the Sea Grant program here has worked tirelessly since then to foster the wise use, conservation, and sustainable development of our Great Lakes and coastal resources. Sea Grant programs make available a wealth of information on marine and aquatic topics, from public school curriculum materials to the most advanced scientific research. In short, Sea Grant funds high-quality research that is responsive to user needs, bringing university expertise to solve today's aquatic environmental challenges. This podcast series will highlight just a few of the many areas where Sea Grant has had an impact, focusing on research efforts affecting the environments and communities around Lake Superior. And to give you a proper introduction, we've brought Jim Hurley in to tell you more about it.
I'm Jim Hurley. I'm director of the Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Sea Grant has continuously funded research on Lake Superior over its 40-plus years of existence. We've had research on Lake Superior, outreach on Lake Superior, education on Lake Superior for as long as I've been involved in the program. Lake Superior is such a treasured jewel of the Great Lakes. It's in the most remote area. It, relative to the other lakes, hasn't seen many of the changes that some of the lower lakes have had. Lake Superior has a reproducing lake trout population better than any of the other lakes. And it hasn't been as affected by aquatic invasive species to the extent that some of the other lakes have had. We've had sea lamprey and other types of invasions in the harbors, but we haven't gotten the major shifts due to quagga mussels and zebra mussels that we've had in the other lakes. So if you look at the lake as a whole, it's probably the most pristine of any of the lakes due to outside forces. There isn't as much human influence around the lake. It's a deep, cold, nutrient-poor lake. And so of the Great Lakes, it probably is the lake that most researchers can use as a surrogate for some of the open ocean areas. That's a great lake to study.
Okay, so Lake Superior is great for scientists. Why is Lake Superior important for people who aren't scientists or sea captains or sports fishermen?
People should care about Lake Superior because it is the most pristine of the Great Lakes. It's probably what Lake Michigan and Lake Huron and further down the chain looked like before human influences came in. When I think of Lake Superior and I think of Lake Superior in relation to some of the lower lakes of the Great Lakes, like Lake Erie especially, do a comparison between Lake Mendota here in the Madison area and, say, Crystal Lake up in Vilas County, a just beautifully crystal clear lake, as his name would say. Down here in Madison, we tend to get a lot of influence from the land, a lot of influence from urbanization, farming practices and such, and we've got a fairly nutrient-rich lake in Lake Mendota. very similar to the processes around Lake Erie, harmful algal blooms, blue-green algal blooms. Those happen here in the Madison Lakes, like Lake Mendota, and also in Lake Erie. If we take a switch and go up to Crystal Lake in Vilas County, a smaller lake, its main source of water is rainfall. It's a beautiful, clear lake. You can see almost all the way to the bottom of a 18-meter lake. Well, our Crystal Lake and Small Lake in Vilas County in northern Wisconsin is what Lake Superior is, but on a much greater scale. It's a lake that has very little productivity, a lake that could also be susceptible to the types of practices that are in the more urbanized areas and the more agricultural areas. There is a possibility that we may have algal blooms, dense algal blooms on Lake Superior. There is a possibility that there'll be increased population growth in the area and that there might be more contaminant release into the lake. It's a lake that should be protected. It's a lake that, much like Crystal Lake, is enclosed within a state park, that we should probably think of Lake Superior as enclosing it in a similar type of protection. Since it isn't highly populated around it, we do have the capability of virtually eliminating direct inputs of contaminants into the lake. It's a lake where we have probably the greatest chance to have a real sustainable, clean lake with some fairly simple practices around it.
So what are some of the challenges with Lake Superior? What has Sea Grant done to help?
There are problems associated with Lake Superior, and we hope to be able to detect them early and before they actually do get exacerbated. We've spent a good chunk of federal funding looking at different processes in Lake Superior, from physical processes, how the lake warms up, how thermoclines, thermal structure evolves in the lake. We've looked at phytoplankton in this really nutritionally poor lake. We've looked at the influence of the watershed on nearshore zones. We've studied lake trout and hope that there's management implications for the research that we've done on lake trout in Lake Superior. We've looked at contaminants and contaminant cycling, and even though this is a pristine lake and it doesn't have a lot of direct inputs of contaminants, it's a lake that's affected by atmospheric deposition. So we tend to see those types of pollutants that are carried in the atmosphere be deposited on the lake and accumulated in fish. So we see in remote regions of Lake Superior, we see mercury bioaccumulation. We used to see DDT accumulation and other organics. We see polybrominated diphenyl ethers accumulating in fish in offshore zones of Lake Superior. Lake Superior could be thought of as a sentinel for other lakes in the region. It's a lake that is a nutrient-starved lake, yet it still has phytoplankton, it still has zooplankton, and fish, even in offshore areas, accumulate contaminants. We've also had interactions on a more social scientific level around Lake Superior. We were heavily involved in working out some of the commercial fishery buyouts of trout fishing on Lake Superior. We had an economist who was working on Lake Superior that helped work with our Department of Natural Resources and also with Minnesota DNR to basically rehabilitate lake trout fisheries by decreasing the commercial fishing pressures on it. Lake Superior is starting to show the effects of climate change. Over the past summer, we've actually found that surface water temperatures in Lake Superior are higher than they've ever been. With that association of change, with the warmer waters, we do get cascading effects of that. Recent research has calculated that an increase in temperature can affect growth rates of the invasive sea lamprey. So we may be seeing some changes now that are cascading through the food web just due to the fact that we have warmer surface waters in Lake Superior. So Sea Grant's had a vast array of different types of projects, all focused on this jewel of the Great Lakes.
Well, it sounds like there's a story to be told. And as we tell it in this podcast series, we're going to focus in on some of the graduate students that Sea Grant works with. Jim explains why.
When Sea Grant funds a graduate student, it's not just they write a check and walk away. What we don't want to have happen is for a graduate student to go through a project funded by Sea Grant without really getting the experience of Sea Grant. And Sea Grant is one of those rare programs in the federal government that looks not only at research, but at outreach and education. We try to expose our graduate students to the fact that they need to do outreach, that they need to do education, that their results don't just end up only in a peer-reviewed publication, but they have practical application. That's what makes Sea Grant a little bit different. We have the expertise in outreach and in communications to help get the word out to the people that need the results of this research. And I think that's a real valuable experience for a graduate student.
With that, it's time to move on to the next podcast. But before we go, I asked Jim if he had any good memories of Lake Superior to share.
My favorite memory of Lake Superior is when we were doing research on mercury out in the middle of the lake, and we were on the EPA Lake Guardian. We had a 3-day cruise that started on Sault Ste. Marie and went to Duluth in the middle of August. It was one of those nights where we were done with our work and we went up onto the upper deck and looked around, and you could see no light from the middle of Lake Superior. You can't see the shore, totally pitch dark. And then above us was a Northern Lights show. There aren't any other great lakes that you can get to a point where you don't see any light from the urban areas around the lake, and you certainly can't see the Northern Lights as brightly as you could up in the middle of Lake Superior.
In our next episode, we'll be heading to the Apostle Islands, so please join us as we explore this secret of the freshwater sea. Till next time.